Hello and welcome to the Real World on Spiritualship podcast. I'm Alan Clark.
I'm Byron Patel.
And in this episode, we hear from Emma McConnellogue from Cicero about her journey from working in finance with British Airways, Shell and Hilton to her current role creating better connected communities where people trade their skills and time through cashless transactions. But before that, Barav, what has been going on in your world?
Well, I'm talking to the youth of today, right? So what gets me is that, so we were just talking about this a little bit before the podcast, right? So it's the whole cancel culture thing, right? Okay, I know it's not really what CTOs deal with on a daily basis. And actually, my CTO life this week has been all about networking, doing these kind of Zoom things. But a lot of the really random conversations I've had is around about this kind of whole cancel culture and the kids and how, look, we're old. We can't get away from that, right? So there are certain things that we are ingrained with, and the things I didn't realize, like there's unconscious bias or whatever it is that you want to call it. There's things that we're ingrained with that I didn't really realize. But then when you talk to the young kids today, there's two sets of people. There's the ones who want to burn everything down and just destroy everything. And then you've got the younger ones who say, well, if you burn it down, we don't know what's left. And so that's really interesting. And that for me, that was the biggest difference I saw in personalities or thinking. Because let's put it this way, right? When we look at people like Churchill, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, right? You see one vision of the person. But Mandela beat his wife. Gandhi used to sleep naked with his kids. Martin Luther King was a massive adulterer. But they still had a vision, right? And like Mandela, before he went to when he was being convicted in court, that speech was amazing. I mean, if you've ever read that, it's just one of the best things you've ever heard in your life, right? Gandhi had some great speeches as well, him and Tagore, that, and then Martin Luther King, obviously we know that. So what do you do? How do you do that, right? So if you're talking about let's cancel everybody, these people are massively flawed. And yeah. Then you look at the young kids of today. I know this is not the CTO aspect of life, but it's the kind of conversation that randomly I've been having. And I know it probably leads into it probably doesn't lead into Emma what you're doing, but it's weird. It's weird. It's there's one part of the world that wants to burn it down, another part of the world that wants to actually open it up, and that who knows?
So do you think in generations to come we look back on Boris and Trump and go, my God, they were actually brilliant?
Well, probably not. But I mean, that's the point. History is history, right? So that's the thing. So I mean, we look through time. I mean, we lived through so much in the last 2,000 years, right? It's not that history stops at any point in time. History is, we are living, we are evolving. We get through things. That this is what happens. What we don't do is we don't. And there was a great podcast I listened to the other day. Is that there's no point in learning the history because the history doesn't actually repeat itself. It never really repeats itself. Not in the same way, the same socioeconomic, the things that that happened in the past are not, like, we're not 1920, we're not Weimar Republic Germany, right? This is not what we are. We are not pre-industrialized UK. We are a different beast. We're not, you know, Drake running around shooting boiling people. So now we have to find our own.
Just what you're saying is just a plea to be optimistic that there will always be opportunity regardless of how negative situations or people or personalities may be.
So then now we look at if we take it from a technology point of view, right? So we have the whole TikTok versus Facebook, the whole TikTok issue, right? So we're sitting there saying, okay, TikTok is bad, but Facebook owns Instagram, WhatsApp, and Facebook. Do you trust Mark Zuckerberg more than you trust Xi Jinping? Right?
Yeah.
I don't, quite frankly. Not that I'm on any of these channels, but are we trusting anyone? Why are the debates that polarized? When actually there are bigger things at play here. The bigger things at play are all of our data is out there and there are people using our information for things that we don't even know that they're using for. And I've got a friend of mine, and this is okay, so this is exclusive for the podcast. I've got a friend of mine who makes who basically makes political software. So software for political parties. They sell it to the Labour Party, they sell it to the Conservative Party, they do it in the EU. And that software goes off, takes everyone who's signed up, and that's just the people that signed up, and then goes and trawls their Facebook, Instagram pages, right? To find out what hot button topics they are interested in, and then sends them more information in that. And that's just the people who have signed up. And it also goes through everyone who thought about what they, you know, any topics, and they go and trawl that. And this is where we're at. This is what people don't understand. It's crazy.
Is there anything positive in that? Is there anything that good that comes out about, when I say a party, I mean that was a small P rather than a political party, any party being able to jump into our psyche and only tell us what we want to hear?
So the positivity is that you can understand people's psyche, right? So you can help. If you were doing something that Emma's doing, which is for the greater good, you could understand how they think and feel and actually use that for the benefit of the masses, right? So one of the things I was thinking about the other day was, and it just randomly came into my head, was like, tipping. Do we tip more? Right? But there's no analysis done on tipping. Are we much more open, altruistic during COVID times than we were before, right? We don't know. I mean, like, I don't know if anyone's ever done that, right? But what's happening now is that we are still analyzing everyone's foibles, everyone's kind of like core beliefs, and we're nailing down on that. And we're not really thinking like, yes, the technology can be used for good, but I don't think it is. And I think the thing is that you can use it for much better.
No matter where you are, there's always that malevolent side of society that will take anything good and turn it to bad.
It's not malevolent, right? It's just capitalist. That's what it is.
Have you watched The Social Dilemma that's on Netflix just now?
Not yet. I want to.
Oh, it's incredible. It's definitely a good one to watch. It's kind of like goes into all of those things that you're talking about and what people, it's really just trying to understand what people's next moves are going to be and really trying to own that person's attention. It's really quite frightening.
I hate all of that. That terrifies. I want to live in a much more simple world. You know, maybe I should just go off and move to an island off the west coast of Scotland and live in a hut. But I don't really worry about what we're going to be able to eat that day.
So not to steal Alan's thunder, but Emma, what made you change, right? What made you go from British Airways and the large conglomerates that you were into a social impact business?
I was quite disillusioned. I was, you know, I'd kind of bought into the whole career, you know, climb up that career ladder, you know, get the money that you need, set your life up nicely and all that stuff. But actually, the only person that was ever going to benefit was me. And I think I started to get a little bit, you know, surely there's more that's going on. But even in the life that I had, I still had frustrations. I still had financial barriers and things that I couldn't do because, you know, I was signed up to this 9-to-5 thing. So really, it was just the idea came and I couldn't walk away from it. I found that the more I thought about it and the more I talked about it, the more I thought, why isn't this just a thing? Like, why is this not more widespread? Like,
why wasn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, we're all in this dog eat dog, which funnily enough seems to have changed during COVID. People have become a little bit more, I don't know, like they started to look around at their neighbours and their communities and people. I mean, the stories I've heard about people helping and people giving up their time and doing things for people that they don't even know. Like, we've just all become a little bit more human, I think. That's the biggest positive that I've seen that's come out of this.
Before we dive further into this, which is exactly what we want to do, your website describes Kessero as an app where you can share skills, helping you save money and feel rewarded. Can you maybe just share with us a little bit more about what Kessero is and how it works?
Yep. So in its simplest form, it's just a place, an environment where you can put something in, do something for somebody, make that arrangement with someone. Spend your time doing something that you're good at, something that you find easy or fun, or you know that you enjoy doing, and then that becomes a credit of time for you then to use for something else that you would need or would want or want to learn, or you know, work that you need done in your home or something like that. So it's completely cashless. So it's a way to empower people to break down financial barriers, and also even in not financial terms, if it's just that you want to give something back that you happen to be very skilled in something and you want to be able to help other people on their way, then it gives you that opportunity to do that.
Brilliant.
I was going to ask a question. So like, what gave you the spark of the idea? So obviously you saw people around you, but what was the spark?
Well, I was made redundant while I was on maternity leave, and I had two young children. And the friend that I came up with this idea with, she was in the same situation. And you know, I was made redundant and happened to go back to this job that I really couldn't face going back to. So, you know, in some ways it was
why couldn't you face going back to it? Gave you the just, kind of heebie-jeebies?
The corporate world, the BS. I don't want to swear on here. Just that whole culture of people standing, literally standing on each other just to be seen to be the best, or, you know, the whole bonus structure, the whole, it was just all so fake and so false. And, you know, at the time when I was made redundant, I was working for Shell. And, you know, when I started working for Shell, I was 28. And, you know, I've a lot to be thankful for, the experience that I had and you know, I qualified my CIMA exams there. But ethically, it wasn't really sitting great with me either. So I think, just, you know, what other options are there? I wasn't setting out, I didn't set out to be an entrepreneur. I wasn't setting out to start my own business, nothing like that. It was literally just, I don't know, the frustration of the situation and looking at the frustration of people around me. I mean, when you're on maternity leave, you see a lot of young mums. You see a lot of people that are maybe on maternity leave and people that are, you know, have all these skills and then they're faced with all these flexi working battles to try and make that work with their family, or they take a salary reduction or they let their career slide to bring up their families. It seems so difficult to achieve that balance. So all these kind of frustrations just, you know, I don't know, but the melting pot, I suppose.
I think that's a really interesting point that you didn't set out to be an entrepreneur, because I feel there is, you know, and given the subject of this podcast, there is kind of like this central casting view of what an entrepreneur looks like. Particularly in this day and age, that they are young, thirsty, super aggressive, technology, cut your throat, driving, striving to build a unicorn and become a millionaire. And that's so not the case. Entrepreneurs are of every size, shape, and motivation. And the fact that you've set out to do something, create a business, create an organization for common good, is absolutely refreshing in this context. Something I wanted to ask you about. I looked up when I first met you, and I was rather, shall I just say, surprised. It was almost 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, that surprised me.
And I seem to remember, as I do with lots of people I meet in the very early part, when they are thrusting and eager and excited, I said, this will probably take longer and cost more money than you expect. 2.5 years is down the line. What's the story been over the last 2.5 years?
It's taken longer and cost more money than I thought.
But why was it?
So, I don't know, we were looking at apps like Uber and going, okay, I mean, the technology exists. It's just, you know, and we can think it, you know, so obviously it must be able to happen. So it'll just be a case of pulling the bits of technology together that we need and putting them into this nice little app that then everyone's going to download, you know, because it's a no-brainer. because I wasn't an entrepreneur and I hadn't, you know, studied business within the context of SEMA, but not certainly around startups and things like that. I think probably went into it a little bit naively. I remember actually sitting with my friend one evening, because we used to get together at night time when the kids were in bed, and going, let's have a look on Coursera, you know, like, and see if we can learn how to build this ourselves. neither of us had even built a website at this point, let alone anything as technical as that. So we kind of quickly realised that, yeah, okay, let's find another way here. I think we're going to need some developers. Even just to get to the prototype stage,
But did that stop your vision, though? Right, not to interrupt you, but like, did that stop your vision? Because you need the technology to actually do what you wanted to do.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, because I think once I was kind of like bought into this vision, I mean, I very much saw it as my purpose. Like, I have to do this. I can't walk away from this now. And sort of a year, I think it was more than a year down the line, we had the prototype ready. We'd gone through all our process maps to death. We'd put a lot of effort in. We'd got the prototype ready. We're working with these developers that we really valued, had a great relationship with. And the next step was really to then, how do we build it? Like, okay, we've got an interactive prototype, we've taken it to focus groups, I've spoken to people, I'm getting good feedback back here, we need to progress with this, but that costs money. We couldn't sit and do it. And also we were having to support ourselves financially by working. We were going to have to look at investment or, you know, loans or whatever that was to try and get the money together to do this. And that was the point actually where my co-founder stepped back. She didn't have the same kind of drive, and also probably wasn't prepared to invest any money at that point as well. So that was really the point. It's like a real point in the road. It was like, do I go forward with this or do I not? And I thought about it for about 3 minutes, and then I was like, no, I'm going I'm only going one way.
I think that's a really important point, which is seldom do the team that start end up being the team that ends, that finishes the journey. And that your co-founder was able to say, look, not for me anymore. I'm stepping off the bus and you can carry on. I think it was very insightful of them, but also very rewarding for you, because at least now you were able to move things forward as you saw fit. You mentioned there about the business thing really built around purpose. And there's a lot more of that I see coming through now than there used to be, which kind of helps validate the view that maybe there is a bigger societal change going on out there. But one of the challenges around purpose is, at one point, where did the line lie between doing the right thing irrespective and doing the thing that will commercially allow this business to have a sustainable future? How are you managing that?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because and it links kind of back to what we were talking about at the beginning there. I didn't want to create something, and the way that I made money to kind of sustain it would be by taking people's data and using that. So I was kind of wanting to stay back from that as much as possible, and also wanting to keep, you know, there's the whole vision that you've got of what you want it to look like. You want it to look appealing, you want people to enjoy using it, you don't want it to be flooded with advertisements all the time as well. So kind of like looking at different ways of how do we make this commercially viable, but while also maintaining that kind of whole vision that wanted it to see. So the way around that was looking at, okay, what we want it to be free and accessible for everybody, because the whole idea here is that it levels things, it gives everyone an opportunity, and that there's no barriers there. So what we thought, we came up with an idea that if you upgrade, you get additional benefits And so that's kind of the model that we've went for, is upgrading. You're able to then sort of build up a bank of hours. You can use them for more projects, but that's still, we're at the point now where the MVP is ready and it's kind of been tested and hoping to launch quite soon. But I think it's going to be an ever-evolving thing. You know, there may still be other options that I've not thought about that makes this more commercially viable. But
so I'm kind of... the pivot.
The pivot, yeah.
I see a pivot potential here. That's another podcast altogether.
Well, that was actually going to be my question, right? So you had a vision here of what you wanted to achieve. And then obviously as you try to realize that vision, things are going to change. So how much did you have to compromise between your initial vision to what you're releasing today?
If I had to compromise. So there's probably some stuff at the start. When you know, and all the excitement before you start looking at a process map, for example, and all the excitement of what you think it's going to look like, there's a lot of stuff that you've had to go, yeah, you know, that doesn't...
Because of money, right? Because you don't have enough money to do everything.
Money, and also, and I think it was actually, Alan, this was another nugget that you'd gave me early on as well, was that, you know, get the core product out there. You know, all these other development ideas and all these other kind of things, they're just a distraction at the moment. And also what I'm going to push out versus what people would want could be very different things. So I wanted to get that core thing out that I could see being helpful, and then really understand from the community of users, what else is it you want? Like what would add to this experience? What would make this better?
So that's the next question, right? So what is... So from now that, you're close to the MVP and you're about to launch, and you must have done some testing around people who are trying to see what you do, how much has your vision changed because of the reality of what's going on around you? I mean, are people still as altruistic as you think they are, or a bit less?
I would say more so. And obviously, there's a big change. I mean, COVID is going to change things quite radically, because you don't want to be putting people in a situation where they're going to be in close contact with each other. I don't want to be the person that makes that happen. So obviously, the virtual thing, we're obviously really grateful that things like Zoom can happen and Skype calls and all that kind of stuff. And that's actually one of the things that I have on a list of development features into the future. Like, you know, would we want to provide within the platform an ability to do virtual kind of skill sharing, or, you know, or virtual kind of project management, or, you know, where you're working together with people and how that will happen. But essentially, back to your point, I think I've seen so many more examples of people being so helpful for each other that I actually think that it's maybe brought us, it's less of a hill, you know, to get people to buy into the concept than it maybe was before COVID. Because
Can I ask a controversial question? And sorry, Alan, to interrupt what you're doing. Would you have done this with your co-founder?
Would I have done this with my co-founder?
Would you have, the things that you've found and you've discovered along the way, was the vision the same with that person as it is today, X months before?
I think so, yeah. I don't think it's changed too radically. I think, if anything, I've probably just got more validation that hopefully this is going to be embraced. I think so.
The only reason I ask that question is because a lot of people start off with, I mean, Alan, you must know this as well, right? So you start off with a team of people, oh my God, we're going to do wonderful things together, right? And then ultimately your vision diverges at some point in time. And then the question is, when the vision diverges and people go off, there's usually one person who is left behind. And you're not the person who's left behind, right? You're obviously the person who's gone off and done that. What you wanted to do first.
That's absolutely my experience. But we all started off, four of us sat in a room and had a view on how it would be. 5 years down the line, there was only one person left, and that wasn't me. Because I got off the bus down that line. And, you know, for all the right reasons. And that's why I asked the question earlier on, you know, about who sees projects. I know I change these projects through, but at one time is the right time, and at one time then it's not being what you want to do.
Did you ever, do you have any doubts, Emma? Did you have any doubts?
Doubts, yes, absolutely. I think I was always able to help myself overcome those doubts just by probably going back to that sense of purpose and thinking about, you know, so quite often I go back to, you know, you maybe, so I have personas that are in my marketing plan, but I also have personas within my own head that I think about are the people that this is really going to benefit. And that's the kind of things that help me go, right, no, I need to keep going forward, you know, I'm all in here. You know, just there's one example that always comes back to my mind is like a parent who's maybe struggling just making ends meet, but they have kids and kids have needs, and they maybe want guitar lessons, or they maybe want football coaching, or they maybe just want stuff that you can't keep providing the money to get. But you have skills, and you can then use those skills to either offset some other costs or to get those guitar lessons for your kids, or, you know, whatever that may be. So that stays in the back of my mind, and that's the wee thing that kind of helps me keep pushing forward.
I love that, how that is just such a strong single idea, that when you're doing this stuff, saying, is this worth doing? Do I believe in what I'm trying to achieve here? I've been able to personify that to the parents who, as you say, want to do the best for their kids, can't do it by just opening the bank book and paying more money out, but there are other things I can do to help make this happen. Question I have for you is around the technology side of this. As an accountant, how did you go around specifying, developing, building, creating the central piece of technology that makes Kessaro work in the real world?
So just stop me if I'm not answering your question here. So I suppose I did dip into skills that I had learned through different jobs by even just from the process map side of it. You know, I'd done a lot of work on Lean Six Sigma, so continuous improvement, when you're looking at a process from, you know, and all the steps that process takes to get from the start to the end. So that kind of took that, and that was how we really worked through, okay, how is this actually going to work? It's one thing to go and meet someone, especially the developers, and tell them what your vision is, but how do you can I get that into their language, or a language that they'll understand? And so I broke it down sort of front end, back end, you know, what's going on from the user perspective, and while that's happening, what's going on from the technology perspective. So took all that, and actually that put us on a really strong footing for going and meeting with developers to talk to them. So there was like the vision, but this is how we see it working. Are you able to work with us on this? You know, what are your ideas? And really, we kind of met with three different developers in Glasgow one afternoon. We just went boom, boom, boom. And actually, the third meeting, they straight away had ideas. That, you know, that it was just like it was clear to them. And I think had we not come with the process maps, I don't think the meeting would have gone in the same way. It was a really, there was quite a spark in the room when we were talking, you know, and that was when we kind of left and we're like, it's got to be these guys. And the relationship, we set kind of an agreement up front, you know, we'll always be open and honest with each other. And it's been actually a wonderful working relationship. Meet with them every 2 weeks, sometimes every week. It's been brilliant. I've completely gone off topic, Alan, so I don't know if I've answered your question.
Not at all. Not at all. I find that really interesting. I'm interested in Barab's point of view on this. And
well, yeah, from my perspective, that's great to hear, right? So that's exactly what we do. So what I do with my team is to actually sit down and talk to you. And Alan's been great, recently introduced me to one of his colleagues. And, you know when you understand what it is that person's trying to achieve, and you can help them, not just by say, okay, I want to create this thing. You can say, okay, maybe you want to create this, and then we can grow into that, right? Mm-hmm. So we can grow into something bigger. But it doesn't have to necessarily follow the path, because everyone has a massive vision. Executing that vision is very difficult. Yeah. And doing it in a way that is sustainable, but also, you know, efficient and cost-effective, very, very hard.
Yeah.
And yeah, so as long as you meet the right partners who understand where you want to go and how you want to grow, that's the best. Yeah. I mean, we do that. I mean, we had recently, a bit of a divergent topic, but I mean, one of our clients can't necessarily pay us, but we understand the history of the business. And so we know that by us doing the work, they're able to get more clients. So for us, it's not really about the payment. It's about the fact that if you're succeeding, we're succeeding, right? And that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a similar situation. I mean, talking about money there, money's been a sore point.
It's hard.
It's usually, but then once you get to a point, you think, well, I'm so far in. But the relationship that I had with the guys when we went to move and progress into the MVP, I didn't have all the money, but they were so bought in at this point, and we had such a strong working relationship that we set up payment terms, you know, to allow them to progress and keep working, which I don't think we could have done if we never had such a good working relationship and if they weren't bought into the vision. And they see this as a partnership going forward, because there are so many more development ideas, and obviously I'm going to need some like maintenance and things like that.
So my only point to that from the IT perspective is that I'm actually living this in a different way right now, is that there's a company that we work with for over a year and a half. And they actually came out with the thing that they said to me. They were out of contract, and I asked them for many, many months, look, with these things that we can help you with, la-di-da, no response. I mean, really no response. No emails, nothing.
Okay.
And then they had an issue, and we said, well, you're out of warranty. And they said, well, and it was 10 days out of warranty. And they said, well, it should be goodwill. There should be some goodwill. And I was like, well, you've never shown us any goodwill. Mm-hmm. And we've given you so much. So why, like, and so that was my, so we did it. We're doing some work. Not that, you know, I want business to succeed, but it's that partnership. And for me, from a technology perspective, there's a lot of people that can abuse it. And it's good to see that you're not that person, you know, that for you, it's about the business and its growth. It's not about the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily about for these guys, it's all about the cash out, right? Yeah. They know that they're going to sell. And so that's it. They want everything for free because they can cash out. And we know I know that.
Right.
Whereas for you, it's about the evolution and it's about that. And that's, yeah. It's quite
clear. And there's also a really interesting part, Neil, which is about you did some really good work to build the right team, to build a group of people who are share a vision, share values, share a view on how it should be. I'm also really interested in the fact that you couldn't write the technical spec of what you required, but you clearly did an awful lot of work using the skills you had to help define the job, the brief, as well as you could, before you actually ask them to give you any more time. And even that level of commitment speaks volumes when you're on the receiving end of it. When you're sitting in the room thinking, this person doesn't know the technology, but my God, they worked hard to really help us be absolutely clear on what the task is. Not what the solution is, but what the task is. I'm aware that time's marching on. If you could share three things that you've learned so far in your real-world entrepreneurship journey, what would they be?
Oh, well, the first one would definitely be back to that relationship thing. Relationships are key, because it can be quite lonely. And especially what I find during lockdown, even more so. I think the other thing I would say at the risk of offending people is that your closest people in your life are not always the best people to give you feedback.
Yeah.
for several reasons. The other thing that I would, and it's probably one of another piece of advice that you'd give me early on as well, Alan, is validation. I've just had so much feedback about how important it is to validate the market. And I think with something like this, where I can't just take a competitor and say, I want to create that, but with these differentiators, it's not as simple to then go out and validate your market. So it's about trying to find other ways of doing that.
If Alan, I can ask one question before we, because I know that we are hard on time. When you said that the people closest to you are not necessarily the best people to give you advice, did you have a lot of negativity when you started out moving from, because obviously you worked at very large companies.
Yeah.
And trying to do your own thing. Was there a lot of people like, well, you're not going to make it?
Yeah, so I think negativity, a little bit of, I think people probably couldn't understand, they couldn't connect the two. But also, I think the fact that the concept, that people are just so, we live in a world where it's all about money. Everything is all about money. It's how the world works, it's everything. So trying to explain it to people that are just like, I don't understand. And I think if I had let that affect me so much, I probably wouldn't have been able to charge on at the rate that I did.
So can I ask one more question? And this is more about, so how did Alan change your perspective on things as a business coach? What did he do? What has he brought to your table?
Oh, goodness. What has he brought to the table? So much. I would honestly consider Alan, he doesn't know this, but I probably would consider him to be my mentor. there's been so much that I've been able to run past Alan, because I think, you know, I mentioned that word loneliness, and I think if you're, and as well, not having a co-founder now, you can't brainstorm yourself, you know, you think of an idea and you think sometimes you don't want to say it out loud or whatever, you know, but being able to sort of run past things with Alan. But really, probably the biggest thing has just been about the importance and actually how everything is all about marketing. And it's so massive. And it's not just simply what people's perception of marketing is. It's just so much more. It's like throughout every element, everything that you do. I would say that's the biggest thing. Yeah. So that's where the biggest amount of my investment is going.
You'd recommend him then?
Highly, but only if I get first dibs. I don't want him not to have time for me.
Emma, thank you so much for joining us today. And that's been a wonderful view of real world people doing real world things, from not the normal perspective in entrepreneurship. That's all for today's episode. Please do subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, and we'll be back again in a couple of weeks with a new episode.
Yes, and we have a new logo and everything, so it's all amazing.
All right, bye for now.
Cheers.